On today's episode, I'm going to share with you guys one of the best cold calling opening scripts I've ever heard. I'm going to break the whole thing down, why I think it's great, share my thoughts and feedback with you. We're going to look at a phenomenal opportunity that home buyers now have. Something just happened on Wednesday this week that hopefully will unlock some of this buyer demand. And then we'll also cover the fact that iBuyers continue to struggle and what that means for real estate agents. So real quick, before we jump into today's episode, if you're a real estate agent and you have a goal to build a listing-based business, you're looking to generate a multiple six-figure income without having to work nights, without having to work weekends, without having to spend money on leads that never convert, if you're interested in learning more about potentially working together in a coaching relationship, I'm going to put a link for you to find out more information about our Listing Agent Academy. Feel free to check it out. And with that, let's jump into today's episode. All right, so let's start this conversation off today by talking about one of the best cold calling opening scripts I've heard in a long time. Now, if you've been following the channel or you've been listening to this on the podcast, you know I talk a lot about how one would successfully open a conversation with someone that we've never talked to before. We've gone into depths with the psychology behind some principles that will lead you to better results. Well, I was watching a podcast the other day on YouTube, The Diary of a CEO with Stephen Bartlett. And if you haven't listened to that podcast, huge shout out to Stephen. Phenomenal podcast. Probably one of my favorite podcasts in the world right now. And he was having a conversation on his podcast and he was talking about how he received this cold call from a salesperson. And it is amazing how he articulates the call that he got. I'm going to show it to you here in just a second. And why he, as the one receiving the phone call, what he said and as to why he appreciated the way the call was handled, I want you to listen to it because we're going to really get into the unpacking of why that call was so effective. So take a listen.
I actually took a phone call as I was coming down the stairs to start this conversation from someone. And they called me and said, "Hi, Stephen, just so you know, this is a cold call. So if you don't want to do the call, just hang up now. But if you've got 20 seconds, let me know." And I was shocked. Absolutely shocked. The guy probably, I think he told me he listens. And I said to him, what a fuck, that's brilliant. Because usually I'm like, I spend 10 seconds trying to figure out if they're trying to sell me something so I can just crack on with my day. But for him to be so honest with me and go, "By the way," he literally went, "This is a cold call. I'm going to tell you about a product. If you don't want to take the call, feel free to hang up now." And I was like, "What? This is amazing."
You're like, so this said, guy's got game. Of yeah. course,
I was
yeah.
like, "What is it?" He told me the thing. I went on their website. I looked at it. I said, "Oh, we use a different tool called Brandwatch." But I said, like, "This has been so inspiring, your honesty with me, that it was so disarming."
Yeah.
And I think people are smarter than we give them credit for. So what's happened on every cold call that I've ever received is that, they call me and go, "Hi, Steve, is this Stephen Bartlett?" I go, "Who is it?" They go, "Is this Stephen Bartlett?" I go, "Who is it?" They go, "Just want to check, is this Stephen Bartlett?" I go, "Yeah." They go, "So what are you doing with your data infrastructure thing, is it, man? Because we've got an offer," and it's like, and then I'm like, "Fuck, get out of there."
Okay, so let's break this down. When I saw this, right? I mean, obviously the work that I do is I help real estate agents be more effective salespeople. Now, when I teach my reverse selling methodology, a lot of untrained salespeople have a difficult time understanding some core concepts that Stephen is talking about that he experienced as the consumer that I really want to make sure you watching this channel or listening to this on the podcast as a real estate salesperson understand so that you can actually use this in your own business. And so let's get into it. The first thing this salesperson did was use what we call a pattern interrupt. And the one that he used with Stephen on that sales call was by relinquishing the perceived control completely to Steven. And, you know, what's funny is that a lot of sales trainers, or, well, I wouldn't even call them sales trainers, a lot of people, they simply don't understand that concept. That alone is what caused Steven to say what he said. It caused him to feel the way he felt, which was like, wow, this is so disarming. Because what often happens when we receive a sales call, or when you make a prospecting sales call, we try to talk. We try to just force the conversation because we think that is what's going to help us further that conversation. But what often happens, as you know, as you're making your outbound prospecting phone calls, is prospects start to resist. As soon as you start to jump into it, hey, this is Brandon. I'm a real estate agent. You know, I was hoping, and they're like, nope, I don't want anything to do with this. Stop calling me. Get me off your list. And so when I coach a real estate salesperson, or when I suggest the way in which we should open a phone call by using a pattern interrupt, specifically by offering to relinquish the perception of control to the prospect, that is exactly what we need to do to lower that prospect's psychological reactance, to lower their defenses, to make them feel less pressure, to make them feel like they are actually in control. And when we can do that successfully, the prospect's compliance to actually have a conversation goes up, not down. And the reason why I really wanted to talk about this, and there's some other things here in just a second that we're also going to talk about, is I made a video on my new cold call opening script. And a lot of people push back on it. Like, I just don't understand why you would give up so much control. That's why I'm making this video right now. That's why I'm pointing this out, because I wanted you to hear from the consumer's point of view how it made them feel. And not only that, the feedback that we get, and this has changed everything for me as it relates to making outbound prospecting phone calls and the success rate that we are seeing with the agents that we coach, the success rate that I have seen in my own personal sales business has been absolutely amazing, to say the least. I mean, the fact that we're having such better conversations just because we're opening up the conversations differently, that's why I am so maybe enthusiastic about sharing this with you. So they open up the phone call by giving up control. And in this case, the salesperson says, listen, this is a cold call. Feel free to hang up if you don't want to have the call. Now, most people aren't used to having that. They're not used to salespeople saying, hey, this is a sales call. Feel free to hang up if you want. No, what they're used to is the exact opposite. Hey, this is Billy Bob from Billy Bob XYZ Company. And they get right in to start selling. They start persuading. They start to try to influence people. And right away, they're met with what? Resistance. And if you are a new salesperson in real estate, you are probably experiencing that right now. You call a for sale by owner. You call an expired listing. You call them. You try to get into your script. And it's like you can't even get into anything before the prospect's resisting or hanging up on you. The second thing that happened on that cold call, or that opener, was something that once we relinquish control to the prospect, we already talked about the likelihood of compliance goes up dramatically. Now, once that prospect says, well, sure, go ahead, I'm open to having this conversation, because they're not used to having that control, compliance goes up, then the second thing that's happening is what psychologists call the principle of consistency. Once the prospect verbalizes their commitment to having this conversation with you, the likelihood for them to behave, to be congruent with that commitment, goes up dramatically. This is how we can see a real estate salesperson's contact to lead generated ratio go up so much because we're able to have longer conversations. The longer you can have a conversation, the more likely it is for you to either set an appointment or generate a lead. We have all the studies that show the longer a conversation goes, the better chances you have at generating an opportunity from that phone call. Makes sense. It's common sense. If you can't even get the first thing out of your mouth before someone's hanging up or resisting, it's going to be difficult for you to set an appointment or generate a lead. So there's a bunch of different ways in which we open up these conversations with prospects. And that was an example of it, right? We might, in real estate sales, when we call a prospect, we might say something like this. Ring, ring, ring. The person says, hello. Hey, this is Brandon. I'm a realtor. Listen, before you hang up, I was hoping to ask you a question really quick. Would that be okay? And we gain the prospect's permission to have the conversation. We give up all of the perceived control to the prospect. And because we do that, prospect's defenses go down. And so if you are new to sales or you're not, maybe you don't have that many calls under your belt yet, try this. The next time you call a prospect, the next time you open up a prospecting conversation, I know it's maybe the thought of doing this gets you a little uneasy. Before you're quick to judge it, I want you to try it. I want you, because a lot of untrained salespeople say, oh my gosh, that just seems so risky. Well, here's what I know that's risky. If you keep calling and you're not happy with the results that you're getting, maybe it's time to change something. If what you're doing is already working, continue to do it. Right? Everything works. There's all kinds of tactics and strategies that work. My job on this show is to help bring to you new ideas that might work better if you're not happy with the results that you're getting. And if you're not happy with the results that you're getting, try something different. And so I'll give you another example, right? We're calling an expired listing. The pattern interrupt might be, hey, this is Brandon. I'm a realtor. I know you're getting a lot of calls. Before you hang up, I was hoping just to find something out really quick, and then you can tell me if we need to have this conversation or not. Would that be okay? Because the other thing that's happening here in using a cold call opening script, the way in which I'm outlining in this conversation and the way I showed you with Steven's podcast, is there's a massive curiosity loop that's opened up in the prospect's mind. Not only have we lowered their defenses, but we've opened a massive curiosity loop. And the curiosity loop is the desire that a prospect has to close that loop also gets increased. So their curiosity is the thing that's driving them to find out, what is this call about? That's the other thing at play here. That's the other reason why opening up a sales call the way in which I just showed you is so effective, because the curiosity in the prospect's mind says, wow, I've never had a call like this before. I got to see what this is all about. And it's the same thing that your favorite show on Netflix does at the end of every episode or at the opening of every episode. It's called a hook. And the way we hook people is by opening up a curiosity loop. So hopefully that makes sense. All right, so let's move on to the next thing I want to talk about, which is this recent story that Open Door, another iBuyer coming out and with mass layoffs. And these iBuyers continue to struggle right now. And so a recent report says that Open Door lays off 22% of its workforce in the latest round of cuts. So in total, here's what the report said. In total, the company cut 560 positions as of their last layoff, their last go about. And so they're attributing this obviously to a slower real estate market. And here's what they had to say. So we're taking these actions now to become aligned or to be aligned with our operational cost with the anticipated near-term market opportunity while maintaining our critical technology investment that will continue to drive the business long term. Now, Open Door, they didn't specify how many employees they still have, but 560 is about 22% of their 2,500 people. So it appears that they've got under 2,000 workers still working at the company. Now, here's the thing. What I don't understand is what all the fuss is about with these companies at all, because iBuying is nothing new. It's simply a wholesale methodology. And I'm going to share my screen in just a second. I want you guys to look at something that I think most real estate agents have never looked at before. Because here's, in coaching conversations over the past 2-3 years, I seem to be having conversations with agents that were so concerned with companies like these coming into the market, eating up market share, and agents thinking that it's tough to compete with these offers, because the sell, the value proposition that an iBuyer brings to the market, what they're hanging their hat on, of course, is the ease of transaction. Hey, you don't have to go through the headache of listing your property with a real estate agent. You don't have to go through the showings and all that stuff. We'll just give you an offer straight up. Well, there's a lot more that goes into that. And this is why I've always told the real estate agents that I coach two things. Number one is that, one, these companies always appear when we have a hot seller's market. When property values are soaring through the roof, you see companies like this coming up everywhere. A lot of these companies tried to get into this business model. Zillow tried it, they got out. Redfin tried it, they got out. Open Door, OfferPad, you name it, a bunch of people got into this business, lost their asses on this business, and quickly got out of the business. And so what I've told real estate agents for years is that, listen, as markets, real estate is cyclical. As the real estate market gets hot, you'll see these things pop up. As soon as the market shifts, you'll see them go away. And that is exactly what we're starting to see. And the second thing that I've told real estate agents is, no matter what model comes into the marketplace, it isn't this all or nothing. What I mean by that is this: there's different segments of the marketplace. There's not one model that fits all. There's not one model that every single home seller is going to go with. Every model will have a certain market share. The flat fee MLS listing that has a certain market share, a certain percentage of home sellers might go the iBuyer route because they want it to potentially be easier. The vast majority of the country is still listing and selling their house with a full service real estate agent such as yourself. The vast majority. And so to fear something that has such little market penetration probably isn't worth it. Now, furthermore, I want to show you something that I think a lot of people aren't aware of. And I'm going to share my screen with you guys now. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, I'll talk through this. But when you dig a little deeper, I'm on Open Door's website right now. And you really, they've got this visual that kind of says, okay, you can either option A, sell it to us directly, sell your house directly to us at Open Door, or list it, you know, and they're kind of comparing the two. Now, if you even look at this, here's what it says. The example they give is a $250,000 sales price. The service charge to sell a house to Open Door direct is 5% of the sales price right off the get-go. The estimated closing cost, 1%. Now, here's the key thing. On this website, which I find interesting, right at the top, it says transparent pricing, no hidden fees, which I think is super misleading to the consumer. And here's why. This is the other reason why real estate agents, I just don't think that this should ever be of a concern. If it ever was, maybe this will help you. But when you look at their website, it costs the seller 5% right off the top to sell a house to Opendoor. Furthermore, estimated seller concessions doesn't show anything. First off, we're in a market right now where seller concessions is very difficult to get. However, if you click on this button, it says buyers may ask you to cover their costs to close the deal. Not right now. However, look what it says. When you sell to Opendoor, we only ask for repair cost. Well, why is that such a big deal? Well, here's what they're saying. We charge you 5%, and oh, by the way, we're going to ask for any type of repair cost that we find as a result of some type of due diligence or some type of an inspection. So now, and it said, let's see, I just want to, I saw this somewhere on their website talking about the fact that most of the time they're asking for money from these sellers to repair the property. So not only are their offers potentially lower than they can get on the open market, they're charging 5% to do it. Not only that, they're going to charge the seller repairs after they've accepted their offer. And at that point, the seller's like, geez, I'm already deep into this thing. I don't want to start all over again. They cough up even more money. So it's not even a cost savings to sell direct to a company like this based on their website. Two, you probably, and it says this right on their website, the estimated net proceeds is less than what they're showing you could get listing it with a full service agent on the open market. So what is the value offer to the consumer, really? One other thing that I want to point out, I'm going to share my screen again. It says this in fine print at the bottom of their website. Service charges are subject to change and historically have been as high as 14%. So the 5% advertised, it seems like that's maybe average, but it's subject to change. And in fact, in the past, they have gone up as high as 14%. So sellers may get a lower offer, more fees to sell it direct to Opendoor. So my question to myself, maybe you guys can help me. I don't know what I'm missing. Maybe I am missing something. It's like, I can't believe that many people would choose that route versus listing it on the open market. Even though listing it on the open market, you could argue that it might be more difficult or more hoops to jump through. If I just believe, and I could be totally wrong, I'm curious to kind of get your guys' thoughts, but I just believe if we were to interview 100 homeowners who were going to sell their house this year, and you ask them this simple question, you have two different options to sell your house. One option would be easier, but you net less money. One was harder, but you net more money. I just believe that most sellers would choose the latter, that most of them would say, listen, I'd rather get more money, even if it means I got to do a little bit more work and I've got to show the property for another week or two and deal with that. I'd rather do that if it meant that I was going to get more money. I think it would be very, very rare to find a seller that was in such desperate situation where they say, yeah, I'm fine getting $20,000, $30,000 less in my pocket if it's easier. How do I know that? Because I talk to sellers every single day, and so do you, that argue quite the opposite. I want more for my house. I'm not accepting that. I don't care. I'll sit on the market forever. I am not giving my house away. I have very rarely, if ever, have talked to the seller who's told me, hey, I don't really care what it sells for. Sell it for as low as you want, as long as you sell it as fast as possible. I have rarely, maybe if ever, have had a seller tell me that. So I don't even understand the value of this offer anyways. Now, these companies, I believe, are in trouble. I'm going to share my screen again. And if we look at the stock prices, Let's look at Open Door first. If I look at the last 5 years, I mean, this thing has just gotten absolutely hammered. Since the peak of 2021, which, oh, by the way, is when we saw the height of the real estate market, housing market, like I told you guys before, these companies do really well when the market does really well. Look at what it's done since. It's done nothing but just go down, 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 down. Investors are leaving these companies left and right. Look at their biggest competitor, Offerpad. If we look at their five-year stock price, this at the height of the market in September of 2021, it was at $13. It was trading at $13 a share. This thing's down to 50 cents a share. And so it seems like a new report comes out almost every single day on one of these companies, either laying people off, struggling to make it. And we're going to find out. Regardless of what happens, however, I don't believe that these companies are a threat to real estate agents and what we do, based on everything I just told you. And I just don't, I don't know that they'll make it long term, but even if they do, because it's such a small segment of the market that these companies are appealing to anyways, I just don't think it's something that we need to concern ourselves with. All right, joining me now, I've got the president of National Mortgage Funding, Steve Frost, to talk about this new conventional 1% down mortgage loan program. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let me tee this up for the audience real quick. So I'm going to share my screen. And can you see my screen okay?
Yeah.
All right, so a report just came out, and it talked about United Wholesale Mortgage revives the conventional 1% down mortgage loan program. And here's what it said. So on Wednesday, the Detroit-based lender announced that it was reviving the conventional 1% down loan, which allows homebuyers to purchase a home with 1% down, known as the conventional 1% down product. It's essentially a 3% mortgage in which UWM pays an additional 2% up to $4,000 on top of the borrower's 1% down. This gives the borrower a total of 3% down payment. Now, before we jump into this, Steve, I just want to talk about what Matt Ishbia said. He released a statement. He said, "We're bringing back the conventional 1% down to give independent mortgage brokers a competitive edge with borrowers and real estate agents while also helping to make home ownership more affordable." So what are your thoughts? What are you seeing in the marketplace? Is this helping? Is this hurting? When this came out Wednesday, there's a lot of real estate agents, a lot of mortgage loan officers that were like, "Ah, that thing's dog shit. Nobody cares about that. Nobody qualifies for that loan." How are you seeing this new product?
The same way I always see free money for borrowers. You know, it's a damn good thing, depending on how you use it, if you know how to use it, right? So I'm assuming the criticism. So the first point of criticism is, you know, that nobody's going to qualify for 50% AMI, right? And so if you look at what, you can look that up on, you can just Google Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac income limit calculator, and it gives you a map. Like, so the market I'm in here in Michigan, right? So our 50% of the area median income limit is $45,000 a year. And people just can't get it through their head. They're like, nobody makes that little money. And if you make that little money, you can't afford a home. And it just, in my opinion, is call it closed-minded or call it whatever you want. But for somebody that's been doing this for a long time and I've seen it all, right? Like, I've been through every weird issue at closing, which means when there's issues that you solve at closings that are weird, you can use those as benefits later. And so the first thing is the $45,000 a year in my market is $22.50 an hour. That's a decent wage. There's plenty of people out there that make $22.50 an hour, right?
So, and that is the income limit, you're saying, because this loan product has some certain qualifications.
Exactly. So in the market, that's like three prominent counties. Now, some counties, it might be $42,000 a year, maybe it's $21.50 an hour, whatever it might be, right? But just to give like a broad example, you know, in that area median, like if you typed in your address, Brandon, for your house, it would come up and say the area median income for Oakland County, Michigan is like $90,000, 800 or something. And then, so you just take 50% of that. And there's all kinds of different levels, right? Because there's different lending programs for what percentage you are of area median income. And what it is, they're just all tools to make homeownership more attainable for people. And again, not to get way off topic, right? But like, if you look back at what borrowers are, like their mindset today is, especially in when there's two people on a loan, they have a very high tolerance for payment, but they have very little cash. Mm-hmm. And if you look at like any economic data right now, like credit card balances are going up and cash savings are going down. And so anytime you can take a transaction like this, where you're getting a grant, like this is like there's no housing counseling, there's no silent second mortgage, there's no down payment assistance BS that you have to meet. There's no like marginalized demographic requirements that you have to meet. There's none of that stuff. They're saying, okay, if your income is this, you get 2% or $4,000, whichever is lower. And that's the bottom line. And so for anybody to come back and say like, this is dog shit, or this doesn't make sense, or this isn't usable, they're just not being creative. There's a ton of different things. And you can look at people that have the 3% down, and maybe they have the money for their closing costs. They're like, well, this doesn't apply to them. They have the money. It's like, what are you insane? Like, you can buy 2 points with that for free from the lender. So now maybe they're getting a 0.5% lower rate. Or like I told you about the other day, I had a client, same thing. They had $4,400 in credit card debt, and they were looking at houses that were like $205,000, $210,000, and they were pretty much maxed out at that point. Well, I was like, well, if we look at taking that $4,000 and we pay off those two credit cards, that opens up another $160 in monthly payment. Knowing you have the 3% and the closing cost covered, we can use their $4,000 and get you guys into a house at $230,000 and have it meet the qualifications for your ratios. So there's all kinds of different, it's a free $4,000 or 2%, you know?
Yeah. I don't understand why people in the industry would push back on this. I think that, I don't know if other lenders have started to offer something like this or not, but I think when I saw this, I said, you know, this will just help buyer demand. This will help people get off the sideline potentially and continue to push this housing market forward. And to your point, the report also said to qualify for this, home buyers must have an income below 50% on that area median income, the AMI, to your point. They have to have a minimum credit score of 620 and a 97% LTV to be eligible. So yeah, why one would dismiss this as not being an option, I just don't know, because the way that I'm looking at this, I agree with you 100% in that this just helps more buyers get into more homes. Why one would downplay this or potentially say that this is a bad thing for the housing market or the real estate market, I'm still scratching my head.
It's people that love participation trophies, right? Like if I can't use it, if it doesn't work for, you know, this group of people, then nobody should get it. Or if it only works for this group of people, everybody should get it, right? Like, give me my trophy too. Like, this is set up for people that don't make a ton of money. This is for the impact demographic for this is low income earning people. Now, this is a part of it that people miss. And so, and I deal with these. So again, being that our business is focused heavily on purchase business, is that for this type of program, I can have somebody that makes $90,000 a year use this program, depending on how their income is structured. So like you don't have to use bonus income. You don't have to use commission income. You don't have to use overtime income. So as long as their base income is that amount, then you can use just that base income on your application. Like, this is not sidelining any guidelines or anything like that. This is just saying this is their base income. They don't base any of their budgeting on overtime bonus or commission because that's just their conservative financial nature. So we only use that base income on the application, and that person can use that loan. That, again, because we're only qualifying off of $45,000 per year in income, it's essentially limiting you to like a $1,700, $1,800 a month housing payment, right? That's going to be like 50% of your debt to income ratio. But still, that's getting you, you can still get a very, you know, depending on where you're at, you're in that like $200,000 to $250,000 range. And if you're a loan guy or you're a real estate agent and you don't play in that sandbox, then I totally get it. But I know very few agents, and loan guys that turn down $225,000 or $200,000 transactions.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, yeah, you hit the nail on the head when you said for home buyers, it's all about monthly payment. And the challenge for people getting into a home in many cases is coming up with that cash due at signing. It's that down payment that causes people to have to continue to rent. So my question for you, Steve, is how big of an impact do you think that this product will have this spring and summer as we move into home buying season?
So I think further in that article, they said they've got applications starting to eat up $20 million. So if you do the math on that, is that 100,000 transactions that they've got?
Yeah.
For that, if you do the math on it, I mean, that's a huge impact. I've used it twice already. So I have
that people right? in
process. I have people in process. I just flipped their loan to that product. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's really, it's a box that you check. Like, hey man, like I'm doing it now. I have a teacher, and then her husband is he's like a recruiter for Aerotech, and we dropped her income, we dropped his salary, we dropped his commission. They found a house in a certain budget. And now we've got an opportunity for them to go into it with a lot less money out of pocket, $4,000. It's a higher purchase price than that, but they've got a lot less, you know, they're bringing in $4,000 less to closing. Use it for, you know, especially in this market, because you're not getting concessions, you know? So whether yeah. it be covering some closing costs or getting a little bit of, you know, having less money to closing, more money in your pocket when you move into a house. Because again, if you think about this market that we're going back to, right? Like we're going back to the listing agent walking in and seeing like, your screwed up paint job, like, hey, in this market, you don't need to get your house painted. Like, let the buyer do that. It's going to sell anyway. Yeah. Your neighborhood, it's a ranch, 3-bed, 2-bath. Like, don't worry about the paint. They're not even looking at that, you know? And so this can paint a house or can, you know, just keep, like you said, keep money in people's pockets.
How many real estate agents know about this? When you're talking with agents out there and the agents that you're working with, are people aware that this 1% down opportunity is back in the market?
Yeah. Yes and no. Right. So again, there's plenty of data out there saying why it's a good thing. A lot of them are still like, I don't know that it's going to apply to anybody that I work with. And again, it just takes that deeper dive, but there's, I would say it's like a 50-50 awareness thing.
Yeah.
The professional.
Yeah. And then thing is whether it impacts a client, you, not you, Steve, but a real estate agent or a loan officer that's listening or watching the show right now, whether it impacts your client right now or not, I think the greater opportunity is to, in fact, communicate this to your audience. This might be a great opportunity for you to use in your email newsletter. This might be a great opportunity for you to make a YouTube video. This might be a great opportunity for you to provide value in the community. Maybe you do a live webinar, and because this is a positive thing, that can only help. There's no downside to this coming into the marketplace other than if it doesn't apply to you, beautiful. There are other loan products for you, but it'll be interesting to see how big of an impact, how much this will actually help the housing market this spring.
Right. And I mean, here's the thing. So for anybody that's dealt with down payment assistance and grants and all that stuff, right? Is that there are some of those products that'll give you $5,000. You gotta have a 640 credit score. You're required to do an FHA loan. And then you have to do housing counseling for like 2 years. Like you go through like an 8-hour webinar, and then you have to talk to a housing counselor about your feelings. You know, yeah. Like, is there anything worse than talking to a housing counselor that doesn't want to be there anyway about your feelings and home ownership in order to get $5,000, which by the way, is a silent second mortgage. So if you want to refinance that loan or you want to sell that house, you're paying that money back after you've talked about your feelings and done all that nonsense. Or something like this is the easiest way other than the one hurdle, right? It's that 50% of the area median income limit. Not everybody's going to qualify for it, but a lot of people do. I mean, and you don't see as many pay stubs as I do, right? But the way business works today, you own businesses and you know how this goes, is merit-based pay. Like you're very rarely are companies out there paying massive salaries anymore, unless you're like a drug company or, you know, something like that. Like most right. jobs these days are paid a fairly low salary and then it's heavy on the merit pay, right? And so if you get in there and you really work hard at, you know, figuring out what your base pay is. Can we get rid of some debt on your credit report because you are making other money? Can we move some things around? We'll get you a free $4,000 for playing, you know, for playing, I don't know, what do you call it, like Tetris with some of your debts and your finances. Then it absolutely makes sense. And you would be a fool to be like, this thing is not a good thing for the market. Like, you'd have to be an idiot, honestly.
Steve, we appreciate you like always, my friend.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. So listen, before you guys go, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I am curious to get your feedback on the new content format, whether you're listening to this on the podcast or you're watching this on YouTube. Do you like this format where I break down a tactic to help you build your real estate business, something about the housing market, and then what's happening with the most up-to-date news in the real estate industry? That's kind of how I plan to shoot the content moving forward on a daily basis, with new episodes coming out Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let me know if you enjoyed the format of today's content, and we'll see you guys tomorrow morning.